This is the Baby Bathwater Podcast, an exceptionally unscripted and underproduced adventure within entrepreneurial reality. Hosted by Hollis Carter and Michael Lovitch, co-founders of the Baby Bathwater Institute and the most reluctant podcasters this side of the Mississippi.
Hi, everybody. In our discussion group and all around the internet, everybody's talking about the Facebook algorithm with Apple, and nobody's had the courage to help because it's really fucking hard. And so Claire Winslow has agreed to come and tell you what's been working for them and what hasn't in a super transparent way. So this is not like all the solutions, but it's a really good start. So welcome, Claire, and thanks for doing this.
Thanks.
And just for most people know you, but just a little background and how you got into this whole Facebook Apple issue would be super helpful.
Yeah. I launched a digital marketing agency in 2015, which when it comes to like Facebook ads makes me a dinosaur, but you know, pre-Facebook, not so much. So right at that sweet spot when things were getting going and paid social. We have about 50 clients right now in 22 different industries. So we do not specialize, but Facebook ads is sort of my bread and butter. We also do other things like paid search and organic social, which is the bane of my existence. But, you know, this is something that partner who y'all know, Mike Brown, he just bought a fitness company. And so I've been acting as CMO and running all of their ads. That wasn't my original intention. My team was going to do it, but obviously he acquired that. He like closed on that around like June 8th, which was basically the day that they totally forced this update. So things ended up being a lot more complicated for us than maybe we had anticipated. So I'm literally an ads manager every day. and we have done a lot of rapid fire testing of a lot of different strategies, literally just like sitting on the couch, like, what do we think we should do given this? Let's try this. And then just not essentially running out of money before we pivot or iterate. So I'm going to be using Brute Force as my example here, just because that's the ad account that I'm in. And also I am cleared to use all of his data.
Awesome. So just for anybody who doesn't know, what exactly is going on between Facebook, Apple, and how it's hurting all of us?
So let me click. All right. Tim and Mark are in like a big, like, I don't know the demure way to say like a dick swinging contest, but that's essentially what's going on. You know, Apple essentially said, and I've got a quote from Tim on the next slide, you know, that we care about the privacy of our users. And a lot of people who don't really understand this feud are like, yeah, privacy, that's awesome. But not really understanding exactly what's being taken from them and how their data is being used. So, you know, when this first happened, when Apple first announced this, and the early rollouts were September 2020, but the privacy stuff didn't go into effect until early 2021. By like February 2021, Mark was, you know, they're talking about lawsuits and coming after Apple. And, you know, basically Tim doubled down and is really focused on privacy, but I'm going to tell you in a second why that's all bullshit. So essentially as of this all started affecting advertisers, you'll see in a second why this really affects small businesses the most, especially e-com and lead gen. Essentially starting in April, when people were opting into the update, they were getting this really scary looking slide here anytime they logged into Facebook, Instagram, and other platforms that utilize advertising.
Got it.
And, you know, I know, Lovitch, you know a lot about language and copy and positioning of words and shit. So you can see here why this is pretty fucked of Apple to put the opt-in in this way. So like they're putting no first and yes second. They're putting it in this kind of scary way where if you're just a random person, you're not a marketer, you see this and like, you're like, oh, ask app not to track. Like there's no good reason why anybody would be allowing this because of the way that it's written essentially. So here's the Tim Cook tweet. Like, this is so high and mighty. It's gross. We believe users should have the choice over the data that's being collected about them and how it's used. Facebook can continue to track users across apps and websites just like before. It'll just require that they ask you for permission first. So why this is really annoying or bullshit. So this is my phone. I just did a screen grab this morning. You can see me scroll down in settings down to privacy, click on that, and then scroll to the bottom into Apple advertising. And you see this little area right here, personalized ads. What that says, if we zoom out, is this is for Apple, of course. Turning off personalized ads will limit Apple's ability to deliver relevant ads to you, but will not reduce the same number of ads you receive. So that's why this is really dumb, is because essentially, you know, Apple is selecting how they want to deliver the same fucking message.
Right.
So this is the same thing. If they had done that to Facebook, then a lot of people, like if they had asked from a copy perspective, like, hey, would you rather get personalized ads or random ads? People would be like, oh, personalized would be great, thanks. But they didn't. So they're really fucking Facebook, but further on, they're fucking everybody who used Facebook and Instagram as a primary traffic source.
Wow, is it Google? I hear it's Google as well coming up, or is it Google now?
Oh yeah, so right now Google and YouTube is doing better because of their ability to use first party pixels, their existing ability. But obviously but yes, that's coming. Email is about to get fucked in iOS 15. And it's all in this name of privacy. Which again is just, it's bullshit. It's a big company using a really big message, like a really popular message of privacy, and manipulating how, you know, they deliver the message about it. So a lot of people, I mean, pretty much any article you see about this, if you're not a marketer, you can tell, like, you can look at the comments underneath and everybody's like, cool, fuck Facebook, bring down the man. But if you're a small business owner, you understand it a little bit differently. Okay. So, you know, if you only had one audience from the beginning of time and you've only ever run one ad or one, piece of copy, then I guess in a perfect vacuum, you could do your own attribution to see just how bad this is going to fuck you. If you're in the US, typically depending on your product or service, between 60 to 80% of all your traffic is mobile. In Russia, like only 1 out of 4 people use a smartphone. So this is US specific, but here that's a really big number. And then beyond that, at least 60 to 80% of US mobile traffic is Apple. On the flip side, like in Bangladesh, most 80% or whatever is Android users. So again, this is all specific to US, but most of us are US e-com people, or probably similar in Europe. And so basically what that means for pretty much all small businesses is that we have lots and lots of lost data. Hopefully you've got a lot of historical data that you can use to compare. But obviously if you're changing your creatives and your copy, it's not like you can extrapolate out and just do your own attribution based on what used to work before. So this is a really big issue for a whole lot of people. It creates two really big issues here. Obviously, you know, the number one issue that you can see is that we can no longer accurately track conversions that are happening on iOS. And so based on that previous slide, for most of us, that's a majority of our conversions. The second one, though, which I think is more interesting, is that because of number one, now all of our top funnel lookalike audiences and interest-based audiences are getting muddied. Essentially, Facebook doesn't know who's converting, so they don't know how to go back and inform those audiences at all. So right. We started to see lookalike audiences. I mean, lookalike audiences basically fell off in April, May, like ones that had been performing really, really well for everybody since the dawn of time just stopped working. And so everyone was really clinging to top funnel interest-based audiences. And then those really got super muddied in June. And that's what I think is so, yeah. So when you look at, like, when you Google this, 95% of people are talking about this first point. And I will talk about that a little bit when it comes to like reporting and how to fix this. There are definitely like action steps. I know Marcus put a great deck in the group that explains like the technical side of what to do to address this first problem. So that's a great resource. I think this number two is more interesting because this is like the long-term secondary effects of all of this shit is basically, you know, you and I talked on the couch the other day, Lovich, about how like this kind of means that we're going to have to go, like advertisers were getting really, really comfortable with Facebook having such super duper accurate data. Yep. And now we're kind of going back to like the early days where you had to do your own learning and your own testing because you can't just rely on this platform to give you like the best data in the world anymore.
Right.
Cool. So I didn't create the next two slides, but Market and Hustle did a really good job of explaining this in layman's terms. Mm-hmm. So I just copied and pasted for the purpose of today. Nice.
Yep.
So this is a really good, from it, this kind of addresses, and I'll run through this more quickly, the technical aspect of what you can do to sort of help conversion tracking. None of these are perfect. And everything is a little fucked on that end, but there are definitely strides that we can all make. So just to explain the technical differences, before iOS, you could put unlimited pixels on a website. Like you could have, I mean, for whatever reason, you could have a million different ad accounts tracking a million different things. Now there's one pixel per domain and it must be verified. So I'll show you in a second how to do that. You also used to be able to have unlimited standard events and a bunch of custom conversions. So what standard events are is obviously like purchase, add to cart, initiate checkout. But you could also, if you were like a super data nerd, you could get really excited about like, you could track, you know, who's going to my FAQ page after they're going to my contact page.
Right.
Like, you know, so people in like data science were utilizing this probably a lot more than like just a traditional marketer. The one that's shitty that's gone away completely is custom conversions. So depending on how your website is built, if you have things like pop-ups or button pushes, we can't track those anymore. So, you know, God forbid you're on anything other than like Shopify or BigCommerce, but if you're, you know, if your website is built completely custom and you had, you know, pop-ups and buttons, then Facebook is definitely really confused as to how to serve you. The scariest one, not the scariest one, but basically attribution window defaults is a huge, I actually kind of like this in a way, because if you're a shady agency, like, you know, no longer, we're all now held to the same attribution windows across the board. And we don't have options to be like, oh, you know, this is tracking 28 day clicks. So I'm a better agency than the one you had before that was measuring a 7-day click. And also those views are completely going away. So now it's just a 7-day straight click attribution window across the board. And that obviously is making our conversions go down. The biggest thing is that there's a huge drop for anyone who has a long buying cycle. So, you know, obviously if you're selling like an impulse buy, I always use on stage, like magnetic eyelashes as my example, they're $8. If they don't work, you're fine. Like people are going to buy those within 7 days of clicking on an ad, probably within 1 day. Right. But if you have like a higher ticket item, or a particular service, then you're going to lose all that attribution. But again, it's bad for long buying cycles in general. This is just a tracking thing. You'll still get the conversions, obviously. But your ad account is a whole lot shittier if you had that 28 day click turned on. So this is the second slide that Market and Hustle put together that I really liked, which just explains the difference between what happens on your events. So you know, if they opt in, then let's say you have your event set up. Now you get up to 8. I'll talk on the next slide how they should be prioritized. If they opted in, then it's going to give us that complete customer journey. If they opted out, it's only going to fire the one event that you prioritize that they did. So like, this is what fucks up retargeting. You can see basically if they go to your website and they don't purchase, then it's only going to give us as far as they got essentially, and there's only one event fire. So we really can't tell what that journey was essentially. And it's great if they purchase. If they don't, it's not.
Yeah.
So again, there are lots and lots of resources on this, and I don't want to be super technical today. I'd rather talk strategy. So this is just a fast and dirty, like, here's where to do it and here's how. This is the URL where you'll find your events manager. It's where you do your pixel setup and where you'll need to verify your domain, which you can do if you're the sole owner of it. And then you set up your events and you prioritize them. So this is the order in which I recommend them. These are five. So technically after these five, you can have other ones if you have other pages or lead gen that's really important to you. But for e-com, for sure, you want to set up purchase, payment confirmation, initiate checkout, add to cart, and view content, and prioritize them in that way, essentially. So those people who are opting out, it's going to give you that prioritized event. So you want that to be obviously in the order that they're going. They visit your lander, they add something to their cart, they start checking out, they add in their payment, and then they purchase. Second, so feel free to copy paste our dynamic UTM code. It's Angular JavaScript. But what that does is allow you to, regardless of what store you're using, to get as granular as you can with what's being tracked. So for instance, this is a 4th of July sale I just ran for Brute Force. This is the back of it, and you can see all the myself and our email agency, which is Jess Chan. I'm going to talk about her in a second, and our Google Shopping campaign. Those are all in here dynamically. So at the very least, we can at least get, you know, what campaigns we think might be driving sales. These are not accurate. I compare these every day to Facebook Ads Manager. Sometimes Shopify attributes more sales than Facebook does to Facebook. And sometimes, of course, Facebook attributes more sales to themselves. And I have a hard time telling which day is what and why that's happening. But again, it's the Wild West, and I don't think anyone knows granularly for sure. But at the very least, we can see, you know, dynamically all the way down to campaign, ad set, ad, at least where our purchases are coming, if it's not breaking UTMs, which if you go in like forums, about 50% of marketers are saying UTMs are great and they work, and 50% are saying not. So who knows? But here's sort of what a lot of people are doing in the wake of this, which is using tracking software. So what these tracking softwares are doing is utilizing their own pixel and their own, you know, heavily technical data storage, essentially, and they're building these out, and they're trying to build them out better than, you know, Facebook and Google are doing to combat this. So there are a couple: Hyros, AnyTrack. We talked about Wicked Reports. They all kind of claim to do the same thing, which is to give you better data than you could get with just dynamic UTM codes. You know, and it's yet to be, like, we've dabbled with some of these. I've had a demo with Hyros. That's the one I hear thrown around the most. That's the one that looks the most appealing to me. It's also, as you could imagine, because of that, really, really expensive. So, you know, they obviously don't publish their pricing, but for a company of our size, which is about 300K a month in revenue right now, it's about $5,000 every 6 months. So it's, you know, it's not that expensive if you can, if it actually does what it says it does and regains you ROI. Here's a screenshot. And this is the reason why I like it over any of the others. I've actually installed AnyTrack, and I'm like, jury's out on it. I really like Hyros because they integrate with all of these platforms. So they'll give you built-in columns, and they'll literally will say, like, this is what Facebook's, you know, attributing, and this is what the difference is, and here's your total. So that you can go in and manually optimize essentially what's working and what's not based on what it thinks Facebook is losing from a tracking perspective to iOS.
Right. So it's giving you that data, but it's not making Facebook smart like it, like the right. face. So it's giving you better attribution data, but it's not yeah. giving you any tools to go hit the individual customer and retarget them.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I find that number two interesting than number yeah. one. Everyone's really talking about how to combat the tracking issues and attribution. Nobody's really talking about the fact that because Facebook can't do it very well, these audiences are getting worse and worse over time.
Yep.
So for instance, for brute force, CrossFit was like, since the beginning of time, it's CrossFit equipment. So obviously when we target a CrossFit specific audience, like we basically would get a 2-to-1 without even trying. And if we have any kind of offer or cool thing to talk about, we could get a 3-to-1, no problem. Obviously, you know, that went down. It went down because of attribution, because of conversion tracking, but we also just didn't, we can see it went down in our revenue too. Like, it's not just that we like left them running and everything is fine. We can see that those audiences are muddied now and they don't work as well as they used to. In fact, I'd love to talk to like Kurt and some other media buyers in this group and see if any weird stuff like this is happening to them. But every time I hit publish on like an ad I'm editing or an ad I'm adding, I tend to get like crazy traffic. Mine specifically is from Ireland. Like in that moment, I'll get like 800 bots from Ireland that show up like in my dashboard and fuck up my conversion rate for yeah. the day. Facebook is drunk basically. And I don't know exactly what's going on, but I do know that, you know, they're trying, and I think things are getting better, but you know, we're feeling the repercussions for sure. So that's what I think is interesting about the high risk. Like, everyone's talking about high risk versus AnyTrack versus Wicked Reports, and no one's talking about like, is Facebook still this reliable source right. that it's always been?
Right, because it's top of the funnel. Now you know your attribution, but you can't go deeper into the funnel.
Yeah, like I can't be like, oh, put these people back into this top funnel column or like category, yeah. take them out. Like, I'm still relying heavily on Facebook to tell me who's in these audiences, and they're losing track of that. So, okay. So getting into some of the strategies that I've been rapid fire testing on Brute Force and some of our other e-com clients. And I apologize, this is very heavy on e-com, because I think a lot of people yeah. in the group are in e-com, but this also, a lot of it applies to lead gen and services and things. But this was kind of my COO and I, like over wine at 3 a.m. Talking about what the fuck we were going to do with our e-com clients. This is where this one strategy was hatched. So sort of mathematically, if we assume that two things are true, one, we do lose, regardless of how much, some amount of tracking once we send this audience member to our website or landing page. And as a result of that first thing, Facebook no longer knows with the same accuracy as it did before who's in what audiences, and those audiences are going to get worse over time the longer this goes on. So assuming those two things are true, we felt like we were literally insane if we didn't keep them in the platform, so in Facebook or Instagram, as long as we could, and let our top funnel audiences qualify themselves. So there are several, and this is really funny because like, if I would have told you a year ago that I was like boosting posts, I mean, that just sounds so dumb. But one of the reasons why you should do like an engagement objective at this point is because that is an audience that you can retarget as a result of that behavior that they just took, that's different than sending them to your landing page and losing them at that point. So I can run a bunch of, the two main ones that people are back to right now are video views and engagement campaigns. So video views I like because I can get 0 or 0 to 1 cent through plays. So someone who watches 95% of a, 15 to 30 second video, I've lost a penny on them, but now like, hey, they're just a little bit more qualified.
Yep.
And I can do that over and over. So I'll show you on the next slide what this is, engagement being the other one. So like, if I want to run like something really fun and controversial, like fun copy and fun creative, and run an engagement campaign, get a bunch of fucking comments, I can retarget anyone who's engaged with that post now. I still am sending, and I'll talk about this strategy, I'm still sending web traffic, of course, and people can obviously go to your website at any point when they want, but from an objective perspective, I'm looking to like grow those audiences and again, let them qualify themselves. So what that is a super wide net video view campaign. Essentially, and we tried this with Brute Force, and I'm playing around with how wide net I want this to be. For a while, I was adjusting just for age and country. Country because of their shipping costs, and age because I can, you know, it's an expensive product, so I can, you know, cap it at people I think might be able to go to a CrossFit gym. But outside of that, I was not segmenting based on interests, because I noticed that our CrossFit audience like tanked, our obstacle course racing audience tanked, you know, so we didn't have any slam dunks anymore. I figured for a penny, I would let a bunch of people qualify this. And I could potentially do this several times. So our plan with this client and other clients, it only works if you have really good video, and really good top funnel video. So that's the caveat, because I didn't love it for Brute Force, mostly because they only had all this creative from the history of time that didn't explain who or what they did. But had they, and that's what we're working on, is getting a lot of creative that we can use in a video sequence. So showing one video that addresses one pain point, you know, at the top of the funnel, adjusting for age and country only, anyone who watches 95% of that for, you know, half a penny, we put into the second video. It's just an old school video sequence, so that by the end of the third video, that's when we can run a conversion campaign, and we're more okay with losing our money and our tracking at that point, knowing that we're sending our own sort of qualified traffic.
I love it. This is like old school, what you do with YouTube and Google.
Yeah.
And also, so have you tried a Facebook shop and just keep it all on there?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we do both of those. You know, people respond differently to how they want to purchase your product. So we always test like Instagram shop, Facebook shop, keeping them completely in the platform itself. A lot of people really like to go to your Shopify site and click around before they do that. But we love it for the, like, Mike is definitely a person who's going to want to buy something as fast as fucking possible. He doesn't care about coupon codes. He wants the convenience of it. So for those people with that kind of buying profile, I think it's great.
But the net is you're running to simplify, you're running a funnel within the platform. So it's never going to your site. So there's never any privacy issues. So Apple can't stop this.
Yes. Right. They can stop it at the conversion campaign, obviously. But then what I'm doing with our bottom funnel, which, I mean, this is not a post iOS thing. This is like a pretty typical thing. Like, let's say I'm looking to do a cross sell for anyone who bought a weighted vest. I want to like sell them on kettlebells. I'll actually do like, that's a super, super tiny audience. So I don't really actually need to do a conversion campaign. I can do like a reach campaign, tell it to like fucking, you know, target these people five times before they don't buy kettlebells. And you know, that's sort of, we're basically looking at our most efficient way to spend money all the way down through this thing. Because basically if I show them 3 videos at 3 cents a person, or 7 videos, 7 cents a person, like the more I show them and the more time I have, the more qualified these people are going to be. And even if they weren't in this CrossFit audience up at the top of the funnel, by the time they watch 7 30-second videos, talking about what we do, like they're going to be more qualified. But yeah, it's that old school, like I'm relying on myself because I can't rely on Facebook anymore.
It's going to be platform by platform.
Yeah.
That's really, yeah. And then I'm surprised Shopify hasn't worked with Facebook to have a Shopify store within Facebook and the Facebook domain. then they would also be able to do that.
There is an integration. You know, we don't use it because there's issues with shipping. Integration, when you sync up with Facebook, you have to ship in a particular way in a particular amount of time with particular vendors. So we're still working on that, but there is a seamless way to do it if you so choose. So here's just basically, there's what works and what didn't. So when we first utilized this strategy, the reason it tanked is because our creative was not intended for a wide net. Mm-hmm. So we had to go back to the drawing board and talk about, like, if I am marketing to Lovitch, who's never fucking gonna stand that workout, I imagine, nope. Like, why, how am I going to convince him in 7 videos? Like, by the end, he's like, oh, I have to try that. As opposed to all this creative we had that we were using for, like, our sales and our, like, our CrossFit audience, basically. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple like tools I found. There's one called Billow, and they have a couple competitors. This is the one we're going to use. It's $59 a video. You can tell them whether you want square or vertical for stories. So this is not influencers. Influencers is next slide. This is just straight up like UGC from people who are in your target audience. They don't post it to their own audience, but they just send you back this edited video that's partially talking head and partially like them utilizing the product. And you right. know, like, here's why it's cool. So basically what we're going to do is, let me pause that. We're going to break this into pain solution, run this very targeted video mm-hmm. series campaign. So like, we've got a couple different pain points for our user. One is like, they, you know, don't want to have 35 kettlebells of 35 different sizes, and then also barbells and also dumbbells. They kind of wish they could have this one, you know, piece of equipment. So whether that's looking at it from a cost perspective or from like a utility perspective, there are kind of two different messages there that we could have UGC built out for us for these ads. You know, there's also the reason why a sandbag is better than steel because of unstable load and odd object. So every time you pick up a sandbag, you're utilizing different stabilizer muscles and fixator muscles versus a barbell. I won't get too far into it because it's our company and not yours, but essentially saying like, these are all the things that people are interested in or the pain points that they have. I don't have a garage that's big enough. And if we build these out one by one, you know, we're planning to blow a couple $1,000s on this at 59 per creative. We're going to get, you know, 20 videos or something that we can organize and rank out how we want to sort of build this.
How do they make the videos? I mean, what do you send them and what do they do?
Oh, so this is really interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, in the old days, we wanted to make our ads look like they were on TV. These days, like bar none, what works best for us, for this brand and for most of our e-commerce brands is grittier videos shot on an iPhone. So we want them to be wobbly. We want them to be like taking us along on their workout. And talking, I mean, and once you sort of, we're building these and we're seeing these all over the place. Like this is what's, what converts for us. We have an in-house designer, and he's an amazing videographer, and his ads just don't fucking work, because they're ads essentially. Like, we're trying to make our ads look like they're organic testimonials. So yeah, I mean, that's why they're $59, is because I think it's even part of the deal is that they're shot on an iPhone.
But they shoot them. That's what I'm asking. How does it work?
Yeah. So they apply. We it's the same way for this. And then next slide, these are a bunch of influencer platforms. The difference between these two, the influencer platforms are typically more expensive because we're paying a micro influencer in addition to giving them product, and they are sharing these things with their audiences as an ad.
Right.
The difference between Billow and the other platforms is that in this case, so we still build the campaign. That's same across all of these. They still apply. So we care. I mean, we want them to be fitness people or people who look like they could be fitness people. But in this case, we don't actually care about how big their audience is. Maybe they're a really fit person.
Sure.
no Instagram audience, they can still be like a Billow creator. They film this thing with their workout and their testimonial and send it back to us. They are cool. The examples I've seen, we're literally launching this campaign right now. So this is all very in the moment, like happening now. But the examples I've seen have been edited really well. So they are doing some, at least the ones they use as examples, they are doing.
This is really cool. So you don't supply the person. They supply the person. You send them the product. They do a video.
You send them the product. You pay $59 to the platform and they do the video.
It's fucking sweet.
I know, right? Yeah. So the one we license is Trend. I'm not tied to that one. The owner is kind of an asshole, but there's a bunch of these. They're micro influencer platforms. There's both Discovery, where you don't build a campaign. You just say like, I'm looking for this person with an engagement rate of this, with a following of this. And I want them to be based here, whatever. You kind of outline the parameters and then you utilize it to do discovery and manual outreach. That's something our agency does as a service for our clients. You can also use these platforms where, similar to Billow, you create a campaign, you get people apply. So I think for our last campaign we did for Brute Force, we had about 40 people apply and we accepted 9. And the metrics that we're looking for are, in this case, they are influencers and we are paying them about $100 a post. So we do care a lot more about their following, their engagement rate, but mostly the quality of that engagement. So I want people like asking in the comments, ooh, cool. Like, how do I find a sandbag workout? Or what'd you think of this one versus this one? Like, that's the engagement we're looking for, where we can tell that people don't just think this is an ad. And it's not like bot engagement, but this has been great for us. Obviously, both of these can be used in our ads. Essentially, they sign, you know, their rights away to the content they produce. So we can use both of these in ads. The big difference is the influencer platforms are a little bit more expensive, but we also get to piggyback on the audiences they already have. So the ones we picked have about 10 to 20,000 followers, but they're all fitness people who care a lot about watching this one particular influencer workout. And so, you know, them pushing sandbags, we want to see a little bump from each one of those posts. Regardless of what you're using, but we're going to use them both. So I'll report back how Billow is.
Here's an example.
This is someone you know.
So this is no excuses to not get the workout in. I use this tool in just about every single one of my training sessions. If you need a heavy load, you just add more sand. If you need a lighter load, you just take a little bit out. Don't have a sandbag, I highly suggest you get one. You will not be disappointed.
Okay, so that's when we did ourselves. But you can see like super pretty talking head testimonial style with clips of her actually using the product. And about 30 seconds is what we're looking for. So each video addressing a solution to a pain point. If we're using it on YouTube, it doesn't need captions because about 95% of people who watch on YouTube are watching with sound. About 5% of people who watch on Facebook and Instagram are watching with sound. So we always, I pay rev.com $1 a minute to give me an SRT file that I add on to the video to make sure that all the people watching without sound are still getting the message. And then again, to recap on this particular strategy, what did not work was utilizing our existing videos. We were kind of panicking in June and came up with a strategy before we came up with the creative to match it. So we just launched it with a bunch of shitty mid and bottom funnel brand aware video, and you know, the quality of the traffic, even after they watch 3 of those, they still don't know like why we're selling them a sandbag.
Right.
So for this strategy to work, I think the creative and the copy to go along with it is the most important thing, obviously, to address pains one by one. Okay. How are we on time, by the way?
Fine.
What time it is. I'm on my phone. Oh, we're good. We're 30 minutes in. Okay, cool. Strategy number 2. What's really interesting is that depending on your AOV, or like, you know, whether you're selling magnetic eyelashes or a certification course, with now this mega limited tracking, basically most conversion campaigns unless you're selling a $4 product, have a really hard time getting out of learning because Facebook has not updated. Basically, you need about 50 conversions in a week to get out of the learning phase. And that used to be easy to do when 80% of your traffic and your conversions were being tracked correctly. Now that they're not, a lot of advertisers saw pretty immediately that all of their conversion campaigns, unless they've been running a while, you know, any new conversion campaign got stuck in learning limited. So this is an example of three of our ad sets that we ran post June that just got stuck in learning limited because although we could tell from our revenue, I guess, that these were, you know, turning into sales, Facebook wasn't able to get out of that phase. So we made the decision. Well, one thing we did that didn't work is we turned off all conversion campaigns. That's right where I was when I wrote that Facebook post a couple weeks ago. That didn't work, but we definitely wanted to, you know, until June, most lots of advertisers were putting most of their eggs in a conversion bucket, even at top funnel, because it used to work really well with good audiences, and definitely more diversification is needed. There's a really cool objective that basically would have been dumb before today to utilize too much, which is add to cart. Essentially, it's optimizing for people who add shit to their cart but don't buy. So why you would have used it before, I have no idea, but I'm glad it exists now because now this is the first time that I'm actually testing campaigns that are optimizing for adds to cart because it's really important for me to get out of that conversion window and learning the case. So now add to cart all of a sudden is like having its moment. I'm also testing a lot more traffic campaign than I used to. Like traffic is great and has been historically great for things like lead gen, but for a lot of, you know, conversion campaigns in e-commerce, like it didn't always make a lot of sense. Why I really like it and why I believe that it is working is only because we have really good email flows in place. So Best Practice Media is the agency for brute force on the paid social and search side, but they hired Jess Chan of Longplay in this group who is crushing it on email flows. So I'll show you what we have set up quickly. This, you can see the difference. Here's a middle funnel traffic campaign that I'm running compared to a top of funnel conversion campaign that I ran. You can see, obviously, you know, the conversion campaign is what, according to Facebook, is driving the purchases, but the cost per link click is bananas. So with this particular campaign, we got about 15,000 link clicks at 19 cents a click. Of course, is that less qualified traffic? Probably, but we are hoping that at some point they are viewing products, adding to cart, initiating checkouts if they're not buying, and we're letting really good email flows close them. So this is a straight screenshot from Klaviyo. I hope, Jess, in advance I'm allowed to show this, but essentially we've got several flows. These are not, we have maybe nine or something set up. We have a welcome flow, a cross-sell flow, a nurture, a win-back flow. But these are the three that essentially are doing the remainder of the work for me. So having our agencies work in tandem is working really well right now. If I'm running a bunch of, as qualified as it can be, traffic and campaigns that are optimized for ads to cart, then I'm essentially saying, like, I'm teeing her up and being like, hey, could you take it from here? So if these abandoned cart flows, add to cart flows, and browse abandoned flows are working as, you know, she says, then the combination of the two is sort of our best holistic approach at closing a sale. So each one of these, I believe, is about four email flow. With, you know, a variety, we're A/B testing different content in here. And what I really like about Jess's team is she's able to tell us essentially after running these for a while, like, here's how much money we're making every time we send.
Yeah, no, back in 2006, before Facebook, all our abandoned cart, we'd send them an email saying, sorry, we're having technical difficulty. We'd apologize for the cart. And then we said, you know, but if you want 10% off, we're so sorry, use the coupon code Rosebud. And for some reason, Rosebud crushed it. But yeah, because those are just people's waiting and they want an excuse.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, so if Jess can say like, hey, we make $10 every time we send one of these emails, and fuck, like 15,000 clicks, you know, even though one thing I will say with traffic campaigns, we are fucking up our conversion rate. Like, it's really hard for me as a marketer to watch because historically to this point, conversion rate has been very important to me. So I want to send super, super quality traffic through there because that's a number I'm looking at. Mm-hmm. And when I send, you know, these 15,000 less qualified clicks, I am driving that down for sure. So if I'm trying to show our shop to someone who doesn't understand what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, it looks worse. Like, our ad account looks bad right now. Our Shopify store looks bad. Like, but you know, we internally understand and know why we're doing the things that we're doing to combat this. Totally. And from a revenue perspective, we have seen a big lift from our June panic attack, you know, to now.
Like you were talking about, all you can do at the end of the day is see how much you spent and see how much you made in profit, you know, and that's it. Not, especially if you can't, and you never get it, even before all this, you can never get totally good attribution no matter what you do.
Yeah, you could do a lot better. Like ROAS used to be a valuable number, but now it's NER. I forget what that stands for, but it's essentially that. How much am I spending? How much am I making? If I can extrapolate out like organic, then I'll do that. Or one way we do it is by looking at returning customers. But if we have a ton of new traffic, we can only assume that they found us through one of these ways. So we just
and just like, this is, you know, not on purpose, but this is forcing everybody to do brand lift activities, which is what Addy talks about. So now, instead of being comfortable with a small market of CrossFit, it's forcing you to go wider, which in the long run, when you go to TV, when you go to retail, all those kind of things, right? Yeah. It'll actually help you, even though it hurts a lot, which is kind of cool. Yeah,
I mean, you know, for him to buy a distressed business in the month of June, it's wild. But it's one of those, I guess, we don't like Jocko, but Jocko's kind of like, oh, you bought a distressed business and it failed immediately? Like, good, you know, because what happened to us essentially was we had all these ideas like in the pipeline, like we would have eventually done all of these maybe, but we would have done them over the course of like 12 to 36 months, just in this kind of like pig and shit kind of way. And as a result of this, it really like forced our smarts and our so like work ethic to make us do all of these things like right now. So now looking back, we're kind of like in awe of the past 2 months and what we were able to achieve in such a short amount of time under such big pressure. Because before this, they, you know, 70% of their sales were attributed to their ad spend on Facebook and Instagram. Yep. So to just kind of like lose that all of a sudden, you know, you have to stand up your email program a whole lot faster.
Yeah, that's funny. I've talked to so many people like, hey, anybody have a solution? Like, no, but get a lot fucking better.
For sure. Yeah.
Really it. Because nobody has a lot magic fucking wand. Better
through testing, you know, and seeing what worked and what didn't. So we're grateful, not to get too woo, but it all works out. So the biggest, I think, strategy, and this is a lot more holistic than the other two, is diversification. So on that note of like the things we would have done over the course of the next few years, all of these were in our pipeline, but none of them were, you know, necessities. And when this happened, it was a big slap in the face, like wake up call to say like, don't let one platform own, you know, 70% of your like revenue. I mean, that's dumb across the board. And, you know, we were going to get caught eventually. We didn't think it would be in the week we bought the company, but, you know, it wasn't a smart thing for the previous owner to do. And it definitely wouldn't have been smart of us to continue. But honestly, had this not happened, I think we just would have been too comfortable to make a lot of these big shifts. So here are several of the things that we did to diversify, from both paid social being here, digital marketing to be here, and then like other sales channels here. From a digital marketing perspective, we moved about half of our existing ad spend, especially like early day, everything is so broken and it's so unreliable, and things are even way better now than they were, you know, a couple months ago. But while we kind of waited for the dust to settle, we moved half of our spend over to Google and YouTube. We have seen some ebbs and flows on Google and YouTube, but nothing like what we've seen on Facebook and Instagram. So I would love it if Tom or somebody in this group would do a version of this on the Google YouTube side, because they've been able to stay a lot more stable. And so, you know, I think that was a good kind of early way for us to mitigate that. And kind of the first thing we did, and, you know, we've seen things dip to 2, go up to 4, but I think 3x ROAS is a pretty like healthy spot for us. Now, again, we've got branded keywords in Google search. So like, you know,
right.
It's hard to say when you've got a 6x ROAS campaign that's like, it's people searching anyway and clicking on like your shopping campaign that would have gone to your website instead. But it's definitely like a more solid platform for us, where we think we know a little bit more what we're getting. And I will say the numbers match up a lot better from Shopify to Google Analytics and ads than they do on the Facebook and Instagram side. So just from a data perspective, like, okay. So obviously if this is happening to Facebook and Instagram, those are the two beasts. So those are the ones that I'm talking about, but it's happening in the exact same way on the Pinterest, TikTok, Snapchat, what have you side. Like basically all paid social is experiencing this. Anything that's an app that people are using in iOS, they're getting these prompts for all of these platforms. However, we just thought it was a great idea for us to diversify away from Facebook and Instagram, even though these other platforms are having the same issues. You know, if one platform dies, we're a little bit more diversified across all of them. I will say, really interestingly, Pinterest is sneaky. They have a default 30-30-30 window. So, you know, I've heard people say like, oh, we're crushing it on Pinterest. And I'm just interested to see, I hope that the people who are saying that are updating their Pinterest attribution windows to be 7-day click only, so that at least the data that we're seeing is, you know, the same across the board. I think a lot of advertisers, and hopefully no one in this group, but a lot don't understand attribution very well. And so the numbers they're reporting on could be I mean, you could have 4 times the amount of attribution that you get in the next 14 days. So the fact that Pinterest is a default 30, 30, 30, and that's 30 day views. Like Pinterest, literally, if I set it to 30, 30, 30, it will basically say it's responsible for all of our revenue, which is not the case. So you just have to be really careful with these attribution windows across all these platforms. But we did diversify. We are on Pinterest now. We are on TikTok now. And I do not think we would have done that this quickly had Facebook and Instagram been working for us so well. Okay. Another big thing that we did to diversify is we completely revamped our ambassador program, affiliate program, and influencer marketing program. So influencer marketing is something that our agency does. I would have done it for Brute Force eventually. I did it for Brute Force immediately. So that's that manual outreach that we do, the influencer negotiation and contracting, and then posting, approval, and reporting is all stuff we're now doing on the Brute Force side. I really like it because it's sort of this funny little hybrid between paid and organic, but it's an owned experience. So it's like guerrilla paid and organic, had a threesome baby. That's influencer marketing. So, but it's a lot more work for sure. But we now have relationships with these 20 people we selected for the campaign and can tap them again. Affiliates is something that, they had never done before that Mike is now exploring. And then an ambassador program. I'd love to talk to, people in this group and compare notes on ambassador programs. What we're essentially doing, we revamped it. Everyone gets like access to 4 flash sales a year and like a shirt and a hat. the way we're going to do it is, and we'll see how this goes, but basically everyone who applies is going to be accepted in. You don't, in order to be an ambassador, you don't have to have a certain amount of like Instagram followers or anything. We just want those super fans to like spread the word in a really guerrilla way.
Yep.
So that's something I'm sure we wouldn't have stood up had we been so comfortable. The other thing is just coming up with really like granular ways to talk to very specific audiences. So, you know, they have their roots in military, figuring out how to speak specifically to them, teachers, students, and then gyms and trainers. On the gym and trainer note, a really big thing that would have been an eventually thing that's a now thing is an outbound sales program, like super crappy, pick up the phone and call gyms and trainers and develop programs for them to, you know, utilize our equipment in their CrossFit gyms and programs, I think is an amazing way for us to own our own audience, you know, and get 100 sales instead of one at a time.
Yep.
And then last but not least, another little what didn't work and something that, so as a marketer, I've never seen, you know, I've never seen my conversion tank the way that it did on day one. And as an impulse, as a response, I'd kill anything that looked like it wasn't working, even though like I knew in my soul that it wasn't tracking correctly. Like anything that showed me like, oh, this campaign was getting a $40 CPP and now it's 400. I'd be like, even though I knew that wasn't accurate, when it first happened, like my instinct was to kill it. And I kept kind of doing that in the first week or so, would launch a campaign, kill it immediately if the numbers didn't look the way that I wanted to, even though I knew that they were better than that. So, in the times that we killed our Facebook and Instagram spend altogether, our theory is that we can never, ever, ever do that. For better or worse, unfortunately, King Facebook does feed the ecosystem, or at least it fed ours. So we would notice when we kill Facebook altogether, like we can't just say like, hey, let's route all of our money to Google, YouTube, and you know, these other things while we wait for paid social to sort itself out. Because it fed, you know, there is an ecosystem and it goes like this and like this and whatever. Mm-hmm. But when we kill one thing that was responsible for most of our conversions, even though our ROAS on everything else was good and we were standing up all these other programs that looked really good, we still needed the revenue from that. And, you know, we notice they all work in tandem. Our Google and YouTube, we see dips on all of these at the same time. So whether that's, you know, just the market telling us that they're not going to buy fucking sandbags right now, or, you know, the fact that they do all work together when our Facebook and Instagram campaigns are working well, so is Google and YouTube and Amazon. So, you know, it's not an option for us to stop completely, but we definitely diversified in a really short amount of time. And the next time this hits us, you know, when this hits us, like let's say in September with email, like I'm really happy that we have all these programs stood up so that we can just be better sellers. and that is all.
That was really, really, that was cool. Yeah, because it's alternative stuff. But you still, it's more that working with, I like the working within the ecosystems, because I think everybody's going to have to do that. Yeah. And the third party people are never, it's going to be really hard.
Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah. So I, you know, again, you can, in all the ad, I'm in a ton of like Facebook ad groups and everyone's freaking out and everyone's talking about Hyros and AnyTrack and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's a short-term solution to fix attribution. It's not a long-term solution to fix like the overall problem.
Not at all. So you've kind of answered. So have you found an amazing TikTok person?
Oh yeah. So, I've offered that in the group before. We have, you know, Facebook reps, when you get them, there's nothing you can't help your friends about. But in addition to our Facebook and Google reps that are sort of would kill us if we tried to whore them out, Pinterest and TikTok are a lot more open to new relationships. So We have an agency rep for both TikTok and Pinterest that are open to connections in this group. And I've connected several people so far, but if either of those platforms is something that you're interested in doing, I think having a human on your team from day one is a lot easier than not. So we have weekly calls with Facebook, Google, Pinterest, TikTok, Shopify, like.
Do the reps know what they're doing at TikTok, or do you need to find, like, is there anybody who's cracked it?
Okay, so everyone has like tiers. And I notice when you start, you're in like the first tier, you're basically like a new advertiser. And then once you spend a certain amount of money, you get hunted up to another person who's going to be on more on the inner circle. So we're about on the Pinterest side. TikTok, we're brand new, but on the Pinterest side, and we have an agency rep, but we have now spent enough money with them across all of our e-com clients that we're now getting moved into what I think is going to be, like, we get to participate in a lot of their betas. We get whitelisted for a lot more. So I think when it comes to what they do, they know what they're doing. That's a good question. I don't listen a lot to what they tell me because they're often like a 23-year-old with a
script.
What I utilize them more for is getting like whitelisted in things that that I want to be a part of. So for instance, like on the Facebook side, we are in a beta test with them to test, you know, attribution. It's specifically for agencies. And what makes that super weird is we utilize them for one client, not brute force, another client of ours. And we saw our conversions go way up, and it's annoying because we couldn't really, they wouldn't tell us why. You know, so then with that one client, our conversions look the way they used to look before. Wow. So I imagine they're doing some sort of estimated attribution based on like Android and desktop traffic. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's still kind of like secrets, but just being able to participate in that, I think is
that's hopeful.
Ideally, yeah, it's hopeful and it's giving us some sort of insight. Now, what makes it weird is then we go back to our client, we're like, oh, your conversions are fixed, but we don't know for how long and if they're accurate or what. So everyone's just kind of testing stuff right now.
I like what you're doing though. I mean, it'd be really interesting to see you'd think that they do better stores in the ecosystem to stay away from Apple and the platforms, right? So
something I don't know a lot about, but I am very interested in is Shopify audiences. Shopify is moving to its own, like that would be amazing. Obviously,
Jesus Christ.
It's only going to help you if you're in Shopify, but I imagine about 80% of
e-commerce. It'd be like Amazon then. That's incredible. So let's just keep track of all this shit. I mean, because it's going to be in platform.
Yeah.
And if Apple's going to play this game, we got to just basically make it so you got to, if you stay in a platform, they can't stop you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's yet to be seen, you know, if Android is going to play this game or like how this is going to.
No, Android. Well, Google can't. Google won't play the game because they have Google. Android. So it's going to be interesting, right? Yeah. They're not going to play it against Google.
Yeah. And I mean, what's another interesting thing is I'm noticing like amongst non-marketers, people realizing like after several months of this, like, oh, if I opt out, it doesn't mean I don't get ads. It means I don't get relevant ads.
Shitty ads.
People are now going back, like regular people are going back into their phones and being like, no, I want Facebook to track me because I want to see ads for things that are relevant. So like, I don't think that that's going to move the needle too much. Like, I don't think, I don't believe a lot in the general public intelligence. So I don't think 80% of people are going to go do that and just fix all our problems. But I do think it's interesting that people are now starting to come around and realize that, you know, ads aren't going away. It's what ads, do you want Viagra ads or do you want eyelash ads?
It's like going back to because Facebook didn't get good till like 2013. I mean, they were around earlier.
I'd say even later than that. Like, I mean, they were still in like display ads.
Yeah. So then you used to not, but when I grew up, you didn't do this stuff anyway. So it's going back and it's like split testing, landing pages, this really minutia testing on the stuff you can control. And we got away with that before. And then Facebook just made it too fucking easy.
Totally. And I'm like the perfect you know, fall case for someone who like came in right when everything was getting pretty easy. And so I've been able to ride that. It's the same thing I did in real estate. I like bought a bunch of stuff right before the crash, 'cause I was like, I wasn't around in the 80s. Like, I don't remember that. And then, you know, everything fell apart. So it's funny to like do the same thing for 6 years and then have this platform. I mean, I knew it was coming, like eventually. That's, you know, cool. It's been an easy sort of
the answer, but I like the in-platform stuff at the top of the funnel stuff with the videos. It's cheap. You can qualify them a lot more before sending them to your site. It's a big thing. And then just go back to what everybody used to do, which is a lot more testing and a lot more shit.
Yeah, for sure. And I know, like, you know, one thing I didn't talk about in this, 'cause I haven't done it, but a really, like, this is totally going back to the basics. So if you want to get really granular and test 100 different, you know, buzzwords, change word here, change word there, do like some really rapid testing to go back to the old days where copy is king. And you know, the way to solve this is to have better creative and better copy than everybody else. You know, that was the old days. Then everything got easy for everybody, so people kind of got lazy. But now, you know, going back to that and being like, okay, like, let's test specific words.
Exactly.
And yeah, so.
Cool. Well, this has been great. Super informative, and we'll just keep all the whole groups following it. So as we learn stuff, we'll just kind of have a thread.
Yeah,
totally. And if somebody figures out if some TikTok wonder kind comes around. That'd be sweet.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's interesting to follow both, like, paid social is now. We will probably still be talking about this in September, but we'll be talking about email a lot more then, with email spoofing and all of that. Like, Apple is killing small businesses right now.
That's crazy.
Being really innovative. It's just mean. Like, it's a
Well, no. See what happens. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You too. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.